Welcome. Third week in a row. I'm going to say it. So maybe we get to maybe week 10. At that point, we'll be on a nice little rhythm. I'm Mario Scalise. That is Jason Gage. And names yet to be determined. I think we'll have to kind of set up a contest soon for the listeners to kind of decide what we should be called, though. So what's going on, Jason?
Not much. I have the chat room in front of me on one side, so we are definitely, once again, taking questions. And we are also getting closer to the point where we're going to be interactive, and we're going to be able to take some callers. I don't know if it'll start next week. We got another special guest on next week. We got a special guest on this week, Gregory Pratt from SoxTalk.com. He'll be joining us around 9:20 Central Time for a little debate, a little heated debate between me and him. You guys may be familiar with him because a couple weeks ago, I got in it with him when he was in the chat room, and he got awarded the first and only, or I guess the first Douchebag of the Week award from me. So he's going to be on here basically proving the point that he knows what he's talking about and that I don't, and that I may be the douchebag. I mean, we don't know. And of course, near the end of the show, I will be giving out this week's Douchebag of the Week, and it's actually going to be a collective effort. And then on the other side, away from the show, I have some Cleveland Indian baseball on because I will be rooting for the Indians to knock off those Red Sox because the Red Sox are worse than the evil empire of those New York Yankees as far as my fandom is concerned. So that's what's going on with me. Oh, and then I'm crying a bit about the Bears. And now, trust me, I got a lot to say about the Bears. So I hope you get people who are ready for some rants because I was pretty calm last week.
Not so much though anymore after that game that they made it interesting. I mean, you have to give them that. But after beating a Packers team that was undefeated in Green Bay and then coming to Chicago and losing to the Vikings, were you kind of thinking that that game was just a game that they should have easily have won going into it?
There's no such thing as a gimme in the National Football League, but the Chicago Bears apparently thought it was a gimme. The Bears apparently thought it was a gimme because they did not show up. And don't get me started on this because I think this is going to be our second half segments when we talk about the Bears. But my God, the Bears are who we thought they were. The Bears are who we thought they were for the last 7 to 10 years, aside from a 2 or 3 year Lovie span. They're a terrible football team is what they are currently.
Okay, so then we go into the Sox. I guess we save the Bears for later. I'm kind of zoning out today, Jason, so I have to apologize to you. But let's get into the White Sox. And there supposedly was this rumor going out there, but it looks like it's complete bullshit because you're talking about Joe Creedy. I think there's ways away before he actually kind of is in any trade rumors. But there was supposed trade rumors for Joe Creedy to, was it the Phillies?
The Fightin' Phils! Everybody's favorite team in the National League, aside from the Colorado Rockies. Silence! Silence is heard.
What do you want me to say about the Rockies? I have some issues with the Rockies. If you want me to get into that, I can, but I kind of wanted to say that if you wanted to kind of get into later on. I do have some definite issues with the Rockies that I really don't want to get into. Because we want to get into the White Sox first and the supposed trade rumor, which you know something about. I have no idea what you're talking about. It's news to me.
Well, are we going to the trade rumor? What are we talking about here?
The Creedy versus...
What do you want to go with?
Creedy trade rumor. Why are we preparing on air? Please tell me that.
I get the big bucks to show up and deliver for a one-hour span. You're supposed to prep me. You're supposed to do all the dirty work.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's okay. I'll step up. I'll take care of this. This deal, Joe Creedy for Paparazzi, is a bunch of BS. It ain't a rumor. There ain't no truth to it. It came from like MLBRumorsCrap.com, IDon'tKnowAnyone.com, IDon'tHaveAnyInsourcedSources.com, whatever you want to call it, whatever you want to say. However, you know, the Phillies do have a need at third base, so logically the person decided to come up with a source, put two and two together and said, hey, Paparazzi, Phillies fans hate him. I know – me and you know they hate him because we were at a game in Philadelphia about a year and a half ago where they booed him. By the sixth inning, he hits a home run.
It went beyond boos.
It went beyond boos. So you have all that debate going on, and they boo. And Paparazzi hits a home run in the sixth inning. Out comes Burrell, and here come the fans. You still fucking suck, you bum. You still suck, yada, 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 yada. So, obviously, Phil fans would be plenty happy to send Burrell out here. And the White Sox have a need for Paparazzi because he actually gets on base. Novel concept, I know, coming from a team that had, like, the worst on-base percentage in baseball. But, yeah, it's, I mean, legitimate trade. It's a deal I'd make, and I make it in a heartbeat because you can move Josh Fields to third base, and Pat Parrell is more likely to get you for sure two first round picks in a year when he leaves.
Yeah, I'm not so much big on that. When you're talking about a guy like Joe Creedy, first of all, that trade's not going to happen. It's not even going to be anywhere close to it. No way the Phillies are going to trade a guy who has back problems and can very well be out for much of next year. That trade is not going to happen. And if it was, the Sox would have to give up much more. If Creedy right now could get you a Pat Burrell, which is not the case, but if he were to, then you're probably better off kind of playing him this year, hoping he's healthy, seeing we could produce this healthy, and you probably get a hell of a lot more at that point.
Well,
Because
plus,
then,
the one thing with
if you look at it
Burrell
from the
is.
Philly standpoint, come June, if Creedy is healthy, wouldn't they want him even more then, knowing that he's actually healthy at that point? They would be willing to give up even more, right? They're willing to give up a Pat Burrell for a guy who has a potential back problem. Why wouldn't they give up more for a guy who you know has proven he's healthy?
Well, I think the first part of that is we don't know that they're going to give up Pat Burrell right now. And more importantly, they're going to have to go out, and I think the best thing, if the White Sox really do want to trade Joe Creedy, their only option is waiting until spring training, letting him at least play in some spring training games so the rest of baseball can see that he's healthy. Hopefully he's producing, because you know what? I know major league production matters and everything, but for a guy that's played in the majors for 5, 6 seasons, Joe Creedy's the type of guy that a scout can easily watch in a short span and say, hey, he's back. He's got everything fine. You give him to the doctors. The doctors pass the physical and says, hey, yeah, he's back. His back's okay. It's 100%. And you go from there, and I think teams would be willing to trade for him. But you also could
But
wait, and you could also see him developing.
he hasn't even undergone the rehab process yet, so.
He's swinging the bat, as far as I know. He is able to swing a bat at this point. So he is pretty much healthy.
Let's stick with the Phillies. Let's stick with Aaron Rowand. Let's go to Aaron Rowand because he made a demand, or at least kind of threw out the amount of money that he's kind of looking to get. And it was in the range of what, 80, in the $80 million range.
We're talking ridiculous money. We're talking 6 years, $84 million. $84 million. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of coin.
And I know last week I actually planned to say this last week, but I didn't. And then afterwards, I'm like, I have to make sure I say it next week. I gotta say it next week. And now I'm kind of glad I didn't say it. But what I was going to say last week was that I was gonna give in. I was gonna give in to the market and say, you know what, White Sox, go ahead and sign Aaron Rowan. Go ahead and give him 10, 12, $13 million. Go ahead, White Sox. Why not? I actually was going to give in to the market, Jason, which I don't think I would have ever seen myself doing. And then, right after I think that, just days after, this happens. This demand happens. And then it has me thinking, you know what? Screw him. Don't get him. Don't get any of them. Why
What?
does it have to happen? I finally try to meet halfway with baseball. I finally try to meet halfway in the logic department and say, you know what? Yeah, given a guy like Aaron Rowan, who has only had one, two good seasons, a 4-year, 5-year deal for $10, $12 million, that seems logical. But no. Days after, I want more. I'm going to get 6 years. I want $84 million. And if it's all true, and if the Phillies' reaction was true, gotta respect the Phillies because they pretty much said, no, you could go. We're not even going to bother even negotiating with you because that offer is so ridiculous. So if that's all true, kudos to the Phillies. Kudos to the Phillies. And I have to feel bad for them because they lost to the Rockies.
Yeah, the Phillies lost to a better team, and Aaron Rowan's demands are ridiculous. There's no way, if I were White Sox GM, I would ever give him 6 years, $84 million. I would never give Torrey Hunter 6 years, $84 million, and I would probably not ever give Andrew Jones 6 years, $84 million, unless you had a lot of incentives in there that basically indicated if they repeated their best years, like if Torrey Hunter and Rowan duplicated this season, that they would get this type of money. But if they didn't, they'd get a lot less. And we know major league players aren't going to take those type of contracts, so that's a moot point. And right now, the best option for the Chicago White Sox is to either hope that Aaron Rowan comes back down and says, hey, I like Chicago. I want to be here. These are my initial demands. Everything with a contract is a negotiation, and this is his starting point. You negotiate lower. You get down to 4 years, $12 million, $12-13 million, maybe even $14 million if you get some incentives in there, some escalator clauses, what have you, and you work things out because there is, you know, no doubt that Aaron Rowan and Ken Williams and Ozzie Guillen, they are all on the same page. Rowan wants to be here, and you know the organization would be more than happy to have him here. And if Aaron Rowan produces like he did last year, Jesus, it'd be worth it. I mean, if Rowan does what he did last year, I'd have no problem giving him 6 years, $84 million, if he did that for the next 6 years. The problem is, it's not in his history, it's not in his past, for you to actually predict that or have any confidence that he's going to do that on a consistent basis.
And I think you brought up a point. You said you wouldn't give Torrey Hunter that amount of money. You wouldn't give Andrew Jones that type of money. So really, it probably would be smart for Rowan to kind of wait to see what they do, because I don't think teams are going to be jumping at signing him. I think the only way teams would jump to signing him is if he were the cheaper of the three options. But if he's looking at that type of money, now I think teams automatically have to thinking, well, you know what? He's looking to get money similar to what Jones and Hunter is getting. So therefore, they may just look to go at Hunter or Jones, right?
Yeah, because I think on the list right now in the pegging order, the number one option is probably Torrey Hunter. There's some talk that maybe Hunter's going to accept a 5-year, $75 million deal from the Minnesota Twins. And if that's the case, I say more power to him. That's a fair market deal. I don't think the Twins are going to offer that type of deal.
Why would they? As low as the payroll that they've had, why would they dump all that money towards him? Towards a guy who really he might be, seeing that a large part of his game is defense, he might be of value to you for maybe for the next year or two. After that, there's serious question marks as to what he could possibly do on the field. So I can't see the Twins, especially the Twins, knowing that they're low payroll, why they would even think of doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this would be a mistake from the Twins' standpoint, and I really don't think the Twins are going to step up and make that type of offer. I think it's more they try to put some rumors out there. They put the word out that, you know, we try to get this guy back, but the reality is, and you can't blame Torrey Hunter for going out and trying to get a big contract, a nice market value contract, and he's going to get that. A team like the Yankees, the Angels may still get that, even though Gary Matthews Jr. is here. There's quite a few teams that could use his defense, and the Atlanta Braves can always opt to bring him in center field and replace Andrew Jones, because Jones is, I mean, as good as gone in Atlanta. So you know he's going to be on the market. You know Rowan's going to be on the market. The Phillies will contend and try to go after Rowan, but the Phillies also have plenty of other options in that outfield between Shane Victorino, Pat Burrell, and their other young players. They have Michael Bourne. So they have a good shot, and Rowan's going to be that odd guy out, though, if the Phillies decide, hey, we don't need him. You have Hunter and Jones rated ahead in free agency, and the White Sox could slide in and get a deal. You're definitely right, and especially if the other two guys have ridiculous demands. But if at the same time, if the other two guys have real high demands, other teams may just come to Rowan and say, hey, we're just going to sign you. We'll let these other guys do whatever they want to do.
This could very well be maybe a year where teams don't – I don't know. Have there been any grumblings as to what teams are going to be willing to offer an Andrew Jones? Have there been any like signs of a team willing to go out there? Maybe one or two teams who are just waiting for the World Series to end for them to go out there and target, you know, a Jones or a Hunter.
I can't say there's a ton of teams. The Texas Rangers have their eye on Torrey Hunter. The Rangers are going to go after Hunter. They were obviously going to go after Jermaine Dye. That plan was ruined and foiled when Ken Williams signed Dye to a contract extension. So Hunter is probably his most likely destination is going to be Texas. The New York Yankees and Boston Red Sox can always be factored into the equation, but I don't really think either of them are that desperate for an outfielder. Melky Cabrera does a great job out in center field. They have a lot of corner options between Hideki Matsui and names escape me in right field right now. They have Bobby Abreu out there too. So the Yankees really don't need a center fielder necessarily. They obviously could. They're more than happy to spend more money. We know that'll be the case. And then the Boston Red Sox, they have Coco Crisp. They have their collection. Obviously, the Yankees also have Johnny Damon, another name that escaped me. So those two teams are out. The Los Angeles Dodgers could look for a center fielder. But wait, they have Juan Pierre already signed a fat contract. They are already trying to get guys like Andre Ethier and Matt Kemp. So these are all teams that are historically spend money on free agency, and none of them are really going to be players. The Angels in their outfield are pretty set. They could go after one of these outfielders, but I doubt it. I think they're going to try to go after Alex Rodriguez, and even then I don't know how interested they are. And they will probably end up biting on the trade market and trying for a Miguel Tejada, a Paul Konerko, or someone else.
So what you're saying is there's actually a possibility for maybe at least a market for those three guys to kind of take a slight drop back, seeing as how big contracts have been given out the last couple of years?
Exactly. I look for sleeper teams. I look for are the Chicago Cubs, because Alfonso Soriano ain't necessarily going to be their center fielder, and they could always upgrade defensively in center and move Soriano to the left field or another spot. So that is an option, and the Cubs can't spend money, especially if they get another new owner in that's willing to go.
Well, I think it all depends on A, how quick they get the new owner in, because it looks like that's going to kind of be carried out to next year. So if that takes a while, that could very well impact it. But also, it also depends how high they are in Felix PA.
And that's true. And from what I've seen is they would be willing to trade Felix PA, or Felix Pie, as I call him. Grammar. Who needs grammar? and then some other sleeper teams that actually spent some money. The San Diego Padres are going to be losing Mike Cameron. They probably will need another center fielder, so they could be an option in there. They could be a player. And the San Francisco Giants, as old as they are trying to get younger. They do have some really good young arms in Kane and Lincecum.
And a 32-year-old Hunter is young for them, isn't he?
He's young for them. Plus, it's not like the Giants are saying that they're going to be in a five-year rebuilding mode. They plan on competing sometime in the next couple of years, maybe even a year or two. And their fans are not exactly sitting around waiting for 5 years. They're not going to be acceptable with that. They're used to a long tradition of winning over there in San Francisco. And Torrey Hunter and Andrew Jones or Aaron Rowan are the type of ballplayers that can help you get back to that point. Maybe they won't get there this year, but you need to have those type of guys around in a year or two. So, they could be players. And they're a team that has financial resources, especially with Bonds leaving. And Schmidt's obviously off their books, and they already have Zito, who signed a ridiculous contract. But aside from that, they don't have a lot of big salary guys there anymore.
Now, Jason, this is your show, and you sent me an email with something about the Chicago White Sox signing a Dominican shortstop. A young Dominican shortstop.
Yeah, they spent $600,000, and this is a record bonus that the White Sox have given for any player that's not in the Major League draft. They gave Po-Yu Lin around $300,000 out of Japan last year, or Korea, somewhere in Asia. And this time they went to Jose Severo. He's a 16-year-old shortstop, and the White Sox really love this kid. He's playing in some instructional league ball. They think he's got a great arm. They think he's got the tools to develop into a good hitting player, that this is an impact talent. But at 16, you obviously have the major question marks of what's going to happen, because a lot changes in your body when you're, between 16 and 21. You have no idea how you're going to handle the change of language, because he is going to be, playing in a predominantly English-speaking area, and he doesn't speak English very well, if at all. And but the bottom line is, this is a sign of the White Sox changing of the guards. It happened when Dwayne Schaefer was kicked out about 2 weeks after the draft, and it has been consistently continuing. They brought in Buddy Bell. They've made changes. They put in a lot more resources in the resources into the Dominican operation, and this is a big news. This is a big move, because this is the White Sox going in a direction that I've hampered them to go in for the past couple of years. And 4 or 5 years down the road, this is going to pay off. You will see this type of talent hitting those major league levels. And I'm not saying this guy's a guaranteed impact player, but I'm saying when you sign guys like Mike Myers at 38, 40 years old, they can't pitch, they can't get guys out. When you're giving guys like Darren Erstad, Scott Pasenik, that really aren't having an impact on your major league team over a course of a season, or the Toby Halls of that the world, when you spread that money out, that $5, $6 million over a couple years even, you're talking about 50, mm-hmm. 60 players that you could bring
that's
in. Only some of them being guys that get $600,000. Most of them are going to get
point.
A lot less than that.
I mean, I can see if you're going to maybe dump $500, $1 million into maybe a guy who's maybe in his prime. But yeah, when you're talking about 38, 39-year-old guys, especially in the case of this year where Mike Myers maybe he could have amounted to something, but you're talking about a team that was out of the playoffs. You bring him in. Yeah, that money adds up. But when you could dump, like you say, these contracts that you give to these young Dominican players or whatever, they're very, 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 very reasonable. So when you're talking about $5, $6 million, that could get you quite a few players and obviously potential some starting players at the major league level.
Yeah, and what I have to repeat is, this is a step in the right direction, but the White Sox are also going to have to prove that they can develop these guys. I mean, the last guys that the White Sox have really churned out of this system are Magleyo Ordóñez and Carlos Lee. And those are obviously two of the most successful ballplayers in baseball. One's a three-hole hitter with the Houston Astros. because it just signed a mega contract, and the other just won a batting title in the American League for the Detroit Tigers. I think everyone's heard of those two guys, and they both had impacts at the White Sox level. And in the case of this young shortstop, you're paying $500,000-$600,000, and when you spread this out over numerous players, you're talking about a few guys that can come up if you can develop, and that is the key. The White Sox new guys that are in the system are going to have to do a better job developing, and I do think they've made a lot of strides getting some guys from out of the organization in here that are going to make that impact and help get the system better. And to go along with that, when we talk this $5, $6 million, I also want to commend Ken Williams and the entire organization for taking a stand. Because if you remember, we go back, we fast forward to before we were a live show, I kept indicating how I wanted to see the White Sox trade Iguchi, trade Mikowiak, and use that savings and put it into player development. And that, and when I say player development, you have two aspects. You have what you do internationally, and then you have what you do, you know, within the United States in terms of the draft in June, the June amateur draft. So you have both of those options, and the White Sox are going to have to strengthen themselves in both areas. And that means spreading the money out to both sides, but also just getting better coachings and better coaches in here and just having patience. If you get more talent in here and you get better coaches to hone that talent, you're going to see that system get better and better and better, and you're going to get to the level that the Angels are on, the Dodgers, and the Braves, three teams that are consistently producing top-notch farm systems, even though they don't get top draft picks. Plus, you add that to the New York Yankees, who have had this new focus, or the Boston Red Sox, who have taken a new focus to player development over the last 2 or 3 years, and you can already see those major league clubs reaping in the impact. You have guys like Philip Hughes, Ian Kennedy, Joba Chamberlain in New York. You've obviously seen Melky Cabrera and Robinson Cano. And then with the Red Sox speaking, you have Buchholz. You've seen Pedroia. They have Ellsbury. You've seen like Manny Decarmon, some of their young arms. I mean, we're talking about a lot of different guys, some Jacoby Ellsbury. So you're seeing guys really produce. And from the minor league system and the White Sox, if they can get to this point, it's going to make them a much better team. It's going to make them a team that's going to be able to contend for the long haul. And let's remember, the number one goal for the Ken Williams is he's always said he wants to become like the Atlanta Braves, who consistently contended for 14 to 16 years and really still contended to the point this year.
A lot of teams say that, but it actually seems that Kenny Williams, based on what you're saying, might be at least trying to do that. It's time. It's roughly around 9:20. And it's soon going to be time for us to get in Mr. Gregory Pratt, who you had some choice words for, I would say, what, 2 weeks ago?
It was our second live show, so it would have been 2 weeks ago. And before we do that, I just want to make sure that everyone knows who's who, because I saw a little thing from Knight. I am Jason. The other person you hear, the other voice is Mario. And the third person you hear that's going to come on in a second is going to be Gregory Pratt. So this is going to be the first time we do this live three-way version, so have some patience with us and let us know if you don't hear anything and sounds don't come good.
We're actually getting
a hold. And if any of you guys have any special questions, let us know.
We're getting a hold of Gregory right now. See, we're not at that technological stage where we could just kind of have people screening and everything else, so I don't know when he's going to come on. Gregory, are you there?
Good evening, gentlemen. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm honored to be the first guest on Southside Radio just 2 weeks after being its first douchebag of the week.
You see that? That's a good attitude. Because I'm sure there's going to be times where we get
with the way I'm setting these records, pretty soon I'll be Barry Bonds once he breaks the all-time runs scored mark next season.
Will it be tainted, though?
I think so. But in today's day, nothing is tainted. Nothing is sacred.
It a lot of depends what you're doing illegally to kind of influence the voting.
Well, let's not mention
really
money
on Jason's
I gave.
Nerve.
And for those of you guys who don't know, I just want to throw this out there so people can get familiar with what this segment is. It's going to be probably a bi-weekly segment. We'll see how everything goes. But it's going to be me and Pratt debating, going mano-a-mano. Mario is going to moderate, throw out a couple of topics, and we're going to kind of discuss them and debate them. It'll be 5 or 10 minutes. And if you guys have any topics that you want to hear, get on in, chime on in that chat room. Let us know.
Now, we're going to start with four topics this week. And I apologize, we're going to keep them very, very generic because this is the first time. I think as we go, we can kind of make it a little bit more creative. But we're going to go on because we just talked about the White Sox. And Jason kind of just hinted as to what it was the first question was going to be. And it's in regards to Kenny Williams. I'm going to let Jason take the first one. I'm going to let Gregory kind of get his thoughts together. How much faith, Jason, do you have in Kenny Williams to take this team to a level that they obviously weren't at this year?
I have a lot of faith in Ken Williams as a general manager, but I also have some concerns. I have concerns with the way that this past season went. I really can't blame him for the failure of the offense because no one could have really seen that coming. I can put a blame on him for the fact that they stuck with Pasenik. They went with guys like Darren Erstad and pretty much ended up counting on those type of guys in, as starters roles. And in Pods' case, he's an injury-prone guy. And those are the only real areas that I can see blaming Ken Williams. I liked when he made the moves, what he did to that bullpen, because it made him cheap, made him young, it made him hard-throwing, and it gave him some talent in that pen. And it was a pen that needed some overhaul to go with a Bobby Jenks and a McDougal, who I thought was already solid, and Thornton, that were already solid. So I thought they had a real good makings of a pen going in, and when they brought guys like Arzma and Cisco and the other like raw power arms like Massett, I thought it was going to work out great. It worked out great for a week or so, maybe more like a month of the season, but it really panned out. It really failed. And then to go along with that, you had the team real failing, struggling, and Ken Williams didn't make a move. The first 2 months of the season, he failed to make a move when this team was still had a great pitching staff that was performing very well. The rotation was performing above average. The bullpen was getting really, really, really suspect at this point. He should have made a move for a reliever. He had enough young arms in the system to do it without giving up guys like De Los Santos, Broadway, and Gonzalez, guys that you don't want to trade. He could have made those type of moves. He could have went for an older type outfielder. There were some guys available that they could have traded for that could have been penciled in over in left field. And he could have went to Ozzie Guillen and told Ozzie that you got to get Erstad out of this lineup. You got to get Pasenik out of there. You got to get Mikowiak more at-bats. He could have done some things that would have maybe given him a chance. But bottom line is, I don't trust Ken Williams when it comes to rebuilding. I think he has a great eye for talent. I think he has a great eye for a lot of things. And this is going to be his most interesting offseason. Because if this team is going to succeed long-term, he's going to have to overturn the lineup while staying competitive because he's pretty much promised the fans that this team is going to be competitive, and he's the type of guy that is competitive. He doesn't have the farm system right now to bring up a lot of guys from the system, so he's going to have to trade major league players to get talent that he thinks is ready to slide in. Plus, he's going to have to be very smart with signings because a couple bad signings can turn this team into the Baltimore Orioles or another just decrepit old team such as the San Francisco Giants of last year. So I'm kind of the point where this is his chance. This is his year because if the things aren't turned around and going in the right direction, whether that means he goes into a full rebuilding mode, which I have no problem with, or this team is contending for a title, then at the end of the season, I think he'll be gone. If those one or the other isn't going on and the team's in the right direction.
All right, Jace, okay, yeah. I guess, do we have to make a rule as far as how long someone can talk? Because you have a tendency to go on these long little rants.
I'll cut it down.
In some cases, you put me to sleep. Gregory, try not to put me to sleep, Gregory. Liven it up. Let's go.
I have absolutely no faith that Kenny Williams can clean this up, but I wouldn't have faith in John Schuerholz to clean this up. The lineup is old, slow, and creaky, and it, worse than that, it's one-dimensional and flat. The speed guys have absolutely no strength. We have a ton of players on our team and in our minor leagues who are in desperate need of steroids. And I just don't see how our offense can be anything above middle of the road, and I think that's generous. I don't think that a Torrey Hunter, or heaven forbid, Aaron Rowand or Andrew Jones can fix it. So I've got some questions about that. And the bullpen, besides Jenk, is nothing but questions and mediocrity. And the starters aren't getting younger. I don't have any faith in our minor league pitchers to come up next year and do anything good. Contreras can just as easily fall apart, especially as he gets older and reaches the humble age of 66. And, you know, you've got questions about Garland and his shoulder. Garland is not going to be a stopper in the coming years, in my opinion. And Burley, we've seen what can happen when Burley's arm starts to tire, and I just don't think that we have the horses in Chicago to make a run or in the minor leagues. If Kenny can do it, you know, he'd be probably the best GM who ever lived if he did this and fixed this whole team in 1 year. But I really don't see it happening. And I take no pleasure in declaring that either.
I thought you were going to kind of finish the thought. It's hard. We got three guys in three different locations. Jason, do you have anything? Have to say anything about it or no?
Quick rebuttal. I pretty much agree that this team is in a bad spot. It's in a bad spot, and I can't say that John Schuerholz. I know Greg Pratt has his love for Schuerholz. It's well documented, and I can't say that Schuerholz would really have a better chance of turning this thing around. The key is going to be what he can do if Ken Williams is ballsy with Paul Konerko and John Garland, and he can get some talent in there and identify some guys that are on the lower level, some high impact guys that he can bring in that maybe have been bust elsewhere, and get them all to pan out and really mesh things together. That's going to be his best option, is moving Konerko and Garland for more people that are quality major league team players, because Pratt hit it dead on. This team it lacks in a lot of positions, a lot of spots in that lineup, major league talent.
Does it need steroids?
Can't live
without it. Because I think that's the steroids. One I agree with the most. I do believe that they need steroids, lots of it. Jason.
I would just like to make one quick point, and that's that I'm all in favor for trading Konerko, but I think that's dangerous because this lineup only does one thing well, and that's hit for power. We trade away Konerko, we've got a serious hole, even if it's for a guy like Casey Kochman. I'd do it, but it would signify rebuilding, in my opinion, and I think it would be an admission of non-contention from the franchise, and so I don't really think that they'll do it. And of course, my thoughts that this organization is more worried about the bottom line and losing the revenue that Konerko brings in is another matter. But I don't think we'll see Konerko moved, even though he probably should be, simply because of what it would symbolize. And even then, I'm not so sure we could get such a haul that we could compete next year for Konerko alone.
All right, let's get into the next two questions. They're going to be on the Bears. And like I said, we're going to keep this very, very, very generic for the first time going. So we're going to have the debate that's been kind of going on all year and all of last year for the most part. And I know you guys were kind of venting at one point or a couple weeks ago. So you have Grossman, you have Greasy. Obviously, I don't know if either one could have actually put some of the blame of the last loss on Greasy, but where do you rank these two guys? Jay, start with you.
First off, I actually am going to be called the flip-flopper. Just call me John Kerry, because I'm flip-flopping on this issue every week. When it comes to Brian Greasy, I want to point out one very important thing. The guy cannot throw a lot of NFL passes, and it hurts. I will not lie to the fact that this offense has scored more points with Greasy, and that has to stand up, and that has to be involved somewhere. But Rex Grossman can make NFL throws. I do not happen to think that Rex Grossman is going to be the answer, especially after seeing Greasy at least showing some composure in the pocket. But if this Bears football team is going to win, the defense is going to have to be what steps out and does it in a big fashion. And right now, if I was going to call for a quarterback, I'd be calling for Kyle Orton. Kyle Orton.
If I understand correctly, the complaint is that Greasy's arm isn't strong and you want to bring in Orton?
Orton can make the NFL throws that Brian Greasy cannot. If you consistently watch the game tapes and the games, you'll see that the reason the wide receivers aren't involved, and to some extent it's because the wide receivers have been subpar, but the main reason they're not involved in this game is because Brian Greasy fails and refuses to go downfield, and he can't throw an out pass. And when you can't throw an out pass, you're typically taking out your two split wide receivers, which in most cases recently has been Mark Bradley and Bernard Berrien. And we know they're quick, we know they're capable of making plays, and you're basically forcing the ball to the middle of the field, since why his tight ends have done a lot, and both Clark and Olsen are great tight ends, but it's also why you see so many excessive checkdowns, and there have been guys open in the field. I saw it a lot last week where I saw Muhammad open downfield, and I saw Hester open a couple times downfield when Greasy just couldn't get them the ball, and it's because he doesn't have confidence in that arm, and it's also because he doesn't have the capabilities to make that throw.
If I recall correctly, Greasy went deep a couple of times on Sunday. But besides that, I'd like to address the further point, the bigger point that we seem to be missing, and that's the fact that this offense is really lacking. This offense is toothless and impotent. Grossman is small with a head that Ron Rivera would ridicule. Orton doesn't have any particular talents that stand out, and Greasy is old with a noodle arm. But even when you take away their shortcomings. We have a play an offensive coordinator who can't call plays to save his life. I don't think Tom Brady could lead this offense to much.
And I think you're dead on. You hit a big thing on there because the coaching staff needs to step up. Lovie Smith is in charge of the show. I know Lovie Smith's not an offensive guy, but he's got to look in. He's got to pretty much point the blame at Ron Turner because the play calling's a joke. When you have Cedric Benson averaging over 5 yards a carry against the number one ranked defense, their number one ranked rushing defense, I should point out, and you all of a sudden pull him out for a whole quarter and go with Garrett Wolf and Adrian Peterson, there is something wrong. When you're consistently abandoning the run with this so-called running team, especially with an offensive line that is poor and two quarterbacks, whether it's Grossman or Greasy, they really can't carry an offense by themselves. Both of them have shown that over the years. Grossman's shown that he's a major question mark. Maybe he's not even maybe he's the bad quarterback. And Greasy's shown that he's average at best. So you know they're going to need other components in that offense. And Turner just turns away from it. He fails everything. His game plan is vanilla. It's pathetic.
Absolutely.
I had to wake up, guys. Sorry. Okay, we're going to get into sticking with the Bears, going to defense. Brian Urlacher, Lance Briggs. You have a lot of people complaining that Brian Urlacher is overrated, saying that he wouldn't be who he is because of Briggs. And, of course, it's always the other way around, saying that Briggs is not really much. And that was kind of the debate going into last year and into this season. Now, Jason, I know you have some doubts, I think, or at least complaints when it comes to Brian Urlacher. But when you look at these two guys, is either one overrated? Is either one underrated? Are they helping each other out? Is one helping the other?
Right now, if we're talking in terms of a career, I'm not implying that Brian Urlacher is an overrated football player. I think Brian Urlacher is the best middle linebacker in the NFL. But this season as a whole, I got to tell you that Brian Urlacher hasn't shown up. He's shown up for maybe a half of football all season. He was pretty decent in the Chargers game, pretty good actually in the Chargers game, and then he made one play in the Packer game because aside from that one play, you didn't see him. And when you don't see your middle linebacker in the football games, that's usually an indication that your middle linebacker is not doing the job. And I'm not saying Brian Urlacher is the reason that Adrian Peterson ran for 200-plus yards, set a Viking single-game record. That's not the reason. It had nothing to do with Brian Urlacher. However, when your best player, your so-called superstar, is not pulling up, he's not showing up in game footage, he's consistently, you know, you have to sit there and wonder, where is he? The question is he hurt? Because if he isn't hurt, the Bears need to be seriously concerned that he is slowing down. Everyone knows the fact that he is mediocre at best getting off the block. Urlacher has always relied on supreme athletic ability because he's probably the best athletic middle linebacker that's ever played the game. And he's relied on that over his football instinct because his football instincts aren't as good as a Mike Singletary or a Zach Thomas in Miami. While Lance Briggs, on the other hand, he's 26 years old. He's in his prime, entering his prime. Urlacher's on the other side. So if I was going to take one of the two for the next couple years, not on a going forward basis, I'm backing Lance Briggs because Briggs has made a play all season when he's healthy, and this guy's a great player. However, Brian Urlacher, maybe he's hurt, maybe something else is there. But if I'm the Bears, I'm banking on Briggs long term, and he got to get him signed and got to get him under contract.
I really think that Lance Briggs is half the man Brian Urlacher is and half the football player that Brian Urlacher is. That said, Urlacher's play has left something to be desired. But I of course I don't know what the problem is there. I don't know if it's the fact that he isn't getting much help on the from the rest of the defense. I don't know if he's slowing down. But this whole team has some serious problems and it's not looking good for them. But I have nothing else to add about Urlacher and Briggs.
Okay, well, I actually had a fourth question, but I don't know if we want to kind of get into the Bulls. So I guess it's kind of up to you. It's one more question. Do you guys want to do it?
I'd be happy to answer
it. Okay, it's about the Bulls. It's about Scott Skiles. And I know some people have talked to him about him last year, saying that he could be a little bit too rough on some players, and that could kind of prevent them from kind of taking the next level and being a championship team because you have to ease up on some guys to make them be sort of all-stars in a way. Is Skiles kind of the guy to kind of take the Bulls to that championship level? Does he have to ease up a little bit, or is this kind of strict, you know, if you don't hustle, you don't play role, good to go for him?
Who do you want answering first?
Well, it's supposed to be Jason, then you, but Jason seems to be... Jason.
I can roll. I'm always ready.
He gauged it.
Scott Skiles, I mean, when we talk Scott Stiles, we're talking about one of the five best NBA coaches in this league. What he has done with the Bulls and what John Paxson has done has been fantastic. Whether he's the guy that's going to be able to take this team home to the next level, I don't know. But I have full faith in Scott Stiles as a team. It's basically kind of right now I'm questioning the White Sox. I have full confidence in the Chicago Bulls and Paxson and Stiles. And, of course, then again, I had full confidence in Angelo and Lovie Smith. And right now, even that's beginning to wander. So, but Skiles is a good coach. He's great at coaching these young players. The players have respect for him. He's fundamentally such a good defensive team, and he's done a lot. They have talent, but they don't have a superstar, and they will win an NBA title. They will, with Scott Skiles.
I'm all in favor of tough love for your players. I'm all in favor of the if you don't hustle, you don't play mentality. And so, as a result, you know, I've got to love Scott Skiles. He's a very good coach. He makes sure that his players are prepared and they come to play. And I don't think there's a problem with that. If you can't handle a coach telling you to play the game hard or don't play at all, then, you know, I don't want you on my team. I want you playing for the New York Knicks or something. So I have no problem with that. I don't think it's a problem. And I think that the Bulls have a good chance going forward, especially with their young team. But, of course, we need somebody who can score some points and be a big man.
Yeah, I think the key for the Bulls season is going to be what happens in that low post position. Will they get enough production out of the young guys like Tyrus Thomas, the veteran Joe Smith, Joakim Noah, the rookie, and Ben Wallace? Can he stay healthy? Can he have a bigger impact now that he's really embracing his team, now that everyone's familiar? And to a point, Scott Skiles has taken his foot a bit off the pedal in allowing Ben Wallace to have a headband. I think he's kind of learned that he can trust his veteran core, that his young players are very responsible young players. They're kind of the opposite, the anti-NBA right now, because this is a team that's fundamentally sound. It's very fun to watch. They always play hard. They always play consistent basketball. And you got to credit Scott Skiles for that, because he's doing what no other team in the league, or practically no other team in the league, is capable of doing on a nightly basis. And you hear that commentary from pretty much every single coach that watches these Bulls teams.
Yeah, on the headband thing, I thought that was pretty ridiculous, just like I thought it was ridiculous when the White Sox made AJ and Creedy cut their hair. You know, that's a little excessive to me.
All right, I think we're going to call this a segment then. Greg, thanks for coming on. I think as we go, at least myself, hopefully we'll get better and we kind of get this thing a little more smooth. We maybe get the topics a little bit beforehand so you guys can both kind of prep for it and we can kind of get a little bit more of a chemistry going on. But anyway, Greg, thanks for – Jace, what do you got? What do you got, Jace?
Wait. Before Pratt leaves, I want everyone to get their tea and I want you to get ready to hear a little poem.
I forgot.
Because he said that
he wants
to give a poem on the Colorado Rockies, the World Series-bound Colorado Rockies. So we're going to prep the stage for about 30 seconds.
It is titled Purple Mountain's Majesty, and I've written it over the course of the last 2 days. Jeff Francis Keyes, the Purple Mountain's Majesty, engulfing October in thick fog as the rocks avalanche from the sky onto earth, crushing snakes, cities, and men, but elevating its own a mile above the ground, higher than the holiday home run, past peaks of American lore so that new men can be immortal. Even the time zone fits, mountain time, for this team of destiny and fate, which found itself out of it in June, but flatly refused to take the third, striking back at every change and curve the league threw its way, winning 14 of its last 15 against dragons, smashing through spider webs, dodging ghosts, and even beating God for a chance to achieve their immortality. Yet some question Colorado's club, wondering if they truly belong with the Red Sox or the Indians, because their television tells them that no other teams exist outside of the major cities in the East. But in this great month of Rocktober, Todd Helton has built his dream season on that great polished jewel of Coors Field. With Corpus and Bridges and Tulips, they have reached their immortality. I thank you, gentlemen, for having me.
Thanks for being on, and I think 2 weeks is the plan when we get this segment back on. It'll be bi-weekly, and then we'll kind of go from there.
On the next time, I'll make sure to bring a little hostility.
I'm sure we're going to get some fire topics. It's not going to take us having to be hostile. It's going to happen. It's inevitable.
All right, thanks for coming on.
I hope so.
We'll catch you later. Thanks for being on.
All right, he is gone. I think I actually accidentally cut him off. And I know people on the chat room were hoping I cut him off, but I accidentally did that because he was about to say bye, and I cut him off a little bit too soon. So I do apologize to Mr. Gregory Pratt. That was not intentional. I swear.
What?
No,
an
don't
what
say good
ass.
Job. Don't say good
Scalise,
job.
I'm supposed to be
and I saw and I saw Tony. I think we would have to have Tony read a poem, or at least a haiku. If you could come up with one haiku, you're good to go for next week. Either a poem or a haiku.
Or
a fairy tale.
About the Blackhawks. They win the cup. That's a fairy tale, Tony. Work with it. You know? Seasons of dreams. Because Tony's going to be on next week. He's going to be our special guest. Mm-hmm. And then in future weeks, maybe any of you guys can be on because we're going to start getting some calls coming in. Probably not next week. Maybe the following week. More likely in 3 weeks. But now we're going to get back to sports. What you guys are all here to listen to us about. We're going to banter about the Chicago Bears a bit more. Correct, Mario? Correct?
No, you're going to banter about the Chicago Bears.
Oh, I'm going to banter.
Well, because,
I don't ever banter.
Because you have to be called out, and you called yourself out on it. You know, 2 weeks ago you were ripping, how can they possibly think Greasy is an answer? Next week you come in, you say, you know what, I think he could be the guy, and now this week you're shitting on him, when really, and I know he had that big interception that, you know, late in the game that obviously hurt them, but he threw, what, 45 passes? When a quarterback throws 45 passes and throws two interceptions, I don't think that's a problem.
I mean, I don't put the blame on this game. I do not put it on Brian Greasy. However, when you watch football games, what are you going to do? Watch the ignore the first everything but the last 2.5 minutes of the game where they scored 2 touchdowns? I mean, you can't do that. You have to look at the fact that this offense did not move the football. It did not do its job. Brian Greasy consistently missed open guys. He didn't make the reads. He's supposed to be the veteran. He's supposed to be the guy that doesn't turn the football over. After all, that's why the Bears went to him. We know Grossman can have 4 or 5 touchdown games. We know that. And I'm not saying he's going to consistently do that. Rex Grossman hasn't been a good quarterback
45
for about a full
times. Season. Plus, Jason, he's old. When you throw 45 passes, that could tire on you.
Vinny Testaverde came in, and he won a game. And I throw up at the idea of Vinny Testaverde. How is it that Carolina can sign someone off their bench, sign someone off retirement out of the old folks' home, that's a better quarterback than anyone the Bears have? And I think you're right. 45 times? Give me a break. The Chicago Bears should never have a quarterback that throws 45 times. Unless you have Tom Brady in there, or Eli Manning, Peyton Manning in there, you shouldn't. And it's unacceptable what Ron Turner's done with this offense. I'm not an offensive genius, but I can tell you that he's an offensive idiot. Doesn't take much for me to figure that out. Hell, I can come up with more creative plays, which tells me something right there. And with that, you obviously have, as Sox Ace brought up, that the O-line is bad. And the O-line did play its best game last week, though. And it did make some strides. It opened up some holes for Benson, and Benson hit those holes. And it's not right to blame Cedric Benson. What has Cedric Benson done the last week? He hasn't done anything wrong. He's protected the football. He had a couple bad drops. I'll give that up. But Benson hit the hole. He ran with more authority. And this is the second straight week where he's gotten better. So I think Benson, as I said, you had to give him 5 or 6 weeks. This has been week 2 of him getting a little bit more carries. And Turner did a horrible job at it because he took him out for a whole quarter. I've seen 2 weeks of improvement, and we're going to see 4 more out of Benson.
I think the key for Benson is obviously that line has to open up some holes. I think if they open up one nice hole for him and they allow him to get back to that first line, I think he could do a lot of damage because I think he's that power back who could take on a lot of linebackers and a lot of cornerbacks. At least that's just from what I'm seeing. I think I have some issues, though, when I see the Bears continually doing these tosses to the right, tosses to the left, and you're having a guy who doesn't really have much speed because really he's not really a speed runner. Going to the outside, trying to use the speed. So I think that's kind of a problem, too, and I think that all goes back to Ron Turner, and it all goes back to the whole passing game, because I believe the last 2 games, Greasy has thrown the ball close to 80 times, or maybe more than 80 times. When you're throwing 80 times over the course of 2 games for a team that's supposed to be a running team, for a team that's had a QB, a quarterback situation for the last 2 years, it doesn't make much sense.
Bottom line, though, the other reason I have a big problem is that Minnesota Vikings secondary is one of the worst in football. And the Bears never targeted it. They never went after it. And I want to know, was that Greasy? Was that Turner? What was going on? Because like I said, watching the game, watching the footage, the Bears had open guys downfield on numerous occasions where Greasy didn't find them. Now, Greasy made four deep throws in that game. One was an interception. Two were touchdowns. One was the Hester pass right on the money. Great job all around. I want to see more of that at Devin Hester because he has the speed to get open downfield. The other pass was obviously to Bernard Berrien, who the receiver, the corner fell down, but I give Greasy credit. He found the guy and he threw the ball right on the money. Berrien made the catch. And then there was a fourth. And people may forget this, but before the Bears got that first touchdown in their 2.5-minute comeback, he threw another deep ball. It was toward Bernard Berrien, and it went right in the hands of a defender. It should have been intercepted. So that's 50% of your deep balls are basically getting thrown to the defense. He had numerous balls that were going to other defensive players, like linebackers, where they weren't even in a position where any Bear could catch them. The only guys with a chance were the Vikings. And I don't like to see that out of a veteran quarterback. And it's more because of the fact that he knows damn well, you heard the announcers indicate such, that he's not capable, he's not confident throwing the ball down that field, hitting wide receivers. He can't hit them on crossing patterns because when you have weak arm strength, guys are going to close. The NFL corners mm-hmm. are fast. They're going to close. Mm-hmm. They're going to hit, and a guy that's open, if you can't get it to him and get it to him early, it's going to be over with. You're not going to have that opportunity. He missed Des Clark on a couple balls where he couldn't get enough velocity in, or he made a late read, and it's going to bite you.
Oh, yeah, and even that pass to Hester, you saw him. It seems like he's got to rear back and take, like, three steps back and then, like, throw it on the run like he's a center fielder with a weak arm. He doesn't have a strong arm, and I see that. At the same time, I think he's not a guy, and maybe that's kind of where you maybe lean towards Grossman. He's not a guy who really should be scoring 28, 31, you know, 35 points. And unfortunately, this Bears defense is leaving him no choice to do so because they could not stop Adrian Peterson at all. At all, and I'm even wondering if they even got a hand on him. Did they have even opportunities to even tackle him?
They had numerous opportunities, but I also want to say the defense didn't do its job. The defensive coordinator failed because every single person going to that game knew the Bears had to do one thing to win this football game. One thing and one thing only. They had to stop the run. Let Tavares Jackson pass. If Tavares Jackson throws for 400 yards and beats you because you have two safeties up in the box, then so be it. You tip your cap. But you do not let the Minnesota Vikings, who have actually had a very good running attack the last couple of years before they even added Adrian Peterson, you do not let the Minnesota Vikings run all over you. I understand if Peterson catches these by surprise and runs one on you, but when he does it three times and three times, two extra times, you have no one in that backfield. No one in that secondary. You're basically leaving guys out there. They were leaving their corners and safeties, young rookies, second-year players, third-year players, and rookies, as the only guys, the only line of defense against an explosive running back like Adrian Peterson. You were just left to get screwed, and that's what happened. Adrian Peterson was amazing, but a lot of that was because of the Bears, the scheme the Bears ran, the angles that some of their guys took, and obviously bad tackling.
Do you think they're bad tackling. Do you think their secondary is set up right? Adam Archuleta was benched, I think, halfway through the game. Daniel Manning has been being shifted from quarterback to safety, it seems like, all year long. Do you have to get anything said as far as the secondary goes, as far as who the safeties are, who the cornerbacks are? Obviously,
yeah, there's
Nathan
no doubt.
Bashers,
Daniel Manning needs to be playing safety. Daniel Manning is, I mean, he's getting thrown in a spot where he's in nowhere land. It is hard to play in the National Football League when you're a young player that's still trying to learn the game, when you're going between position to position. He doesn't even mm-hmm. practice at safety this past week. He's playing cornerback. Archuleta gets benched. He gets moved back to safety. He's just kind of out of nowhere, and you can't do that to a young player. You really can't. I mean, I could see if it's a veteran, a 7, 8, 9-year vet,
yeah.
But you just can't do it. Ricky Manning Jr. got a $21 million contract to come to Chicago, and he should be lining up against the team's second-best receiver with Tillman over there until Vasher gets back. And then if you feel more confident with Manning in the nickel slot and the nickel packages, then you move him back inside and let him play the slot receiver and use the younger players like McBride and other guys on that outside corner along with Tillman on one side. But you keep Manning where he is. In Archuleta's case, I don't even want to discuss the guy. The guy has been outrageously horrible. I can only hope that he'll get a little bit better, a little bit more acceptable, maybe even just decent when he gets his arm healthy, because right now he shouldn't be playing, and I'm kind of disappointed in the fact that they're going to be playing him again next week, but they don't have any options. I mean, they traded Chris Harrison and ended up biting him in the ass.
But really, Archuleta's hand can't be stopping him from covering guys downfield, right?
Yeah, but Archuleta's only real strength was the fact that he plays like a linebacker. He can come mm-hmm. up in the box and stop the run. And without that, he can't do that with his arm. And we know he can't cover. So he's kind of in a worthless spot. He's really not worth anything at all. And it's why that the Washington Redskins had him benched for the last 9 games of the season last year.
Jason, I think we're going to have to wrap this up.
I think we're getting ready to. Getting ready to. But I have one point that it really frustrates me, because I see a lot of people say the Bears made the wrong move when they moved Tommy Harris instead of Chris Benson or Cedric Benson. And I want to point out the fact that when did Thomas Jones become a superstar? When did Jones become a superstar? He is a good, solid running back, but he's not a superstar.
I think there are probably a handful of running backs in the league that you say you don't get rid of. Outside of that, it's all up to you having a line and having a running back who could hold on to the ball. If Thomas Jones was here, the Bears would not be in any better of a shape. They wouldn't. Because this line, he would get hammered too, especially since he has a tendency to dance in the backfield instead of actually going at it. So he probably actually would be in situations where he would have some loss of yards because with his dappy feet.
But, I don't think you're right on that. I think Thomas Jones is actually the type of back that does a little bit better with a worse offensive line. I believe that to be the case. However, I think Cedric Benson's the type of back where if you give him a good to above-average offensive line, he'll outproduce Thomas Jones in that same line. So it comes down to the fact that, yes, Thomas Jones would be a little bit better, but this guy's not a star. He's not a stud. He's an above-average running back. Above-average, but he's not upper echelon. He's not in that category. So I just gotten sick of hearing that from the media and from other outlets, that I want to point out the fact that Thomas Jones is not the reason this Bears team's not doing. The defense is the number one reason. It has nothing to do with the offense, because they've won without the offense before. And yes, we did give up when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor. We did. So without further ado, with this horrible segue into this next topic, the douchebag D-bag of the week. Mario, you got any idea what I'm leaning with on this? I gave you a little hint.
Since you've been crying about the Bears all show.
That's right. I'm giving it to the entire coaching staff. That coaching staff, between the offensive calling by one Ron Turner, garbage. Bob Babbitt, I want to know what he was thinking. Has he ever heard of a little thing called the run blitz? You know, it was invented a long time ago, and it's used to stop teams that run all over you. And Lovie Smith, adjustments. Somewhere you got to step in. Somewhere you got to be the boss. I want to know what's going on in Chicago, because the offensive coordinator is bad. The defensive coordinator has failed to make adjustments. And Jesus, I mean, the Vikings, you got to be kidding me. The Vikings played great. I'll give the Vikings, I'll tip my hat to them. But this should have never, ever, ever happened. Ever. So with that, I think we're going to call it a wrap. Next week, we're going to have some hockey talk. We're going to get into the Bulls. We're going to get into Kobe Bryant, because I know Harris wants to talk about that, because there is some talk that Kobe Bryant could be headed to Chicago. And now that the Lakers ownership is basically okaying and saying that, yeah, we're going to talk and we're going to talk trade with Kobe. And now there's rumblings out of Los Angeles that the only team that can make that offer is the Bulls. The question is whether the Bulls offer Luol Deng. So we're going to be discussing whether they should consider giving up Deng if it gets him Kobe. And so we're going to have that next week.
Yeah.
Maybe some White Sox news. Maybe not. Maybe we'll have a little bit less White Sox talk and focus more on the Bears and the Bulls and obviously the Blackhawks. And then in 2 weeks, I want you guys to be ready. I want you guys ready to call in, because I want to hear what you guys say. I want to hear your takes. I want to hear if you guys are better than us, because maybe you guys can get a show, because in the next, you know, 3-4 months, we're going to try to branch out and get a couple other shows that talk Chicago sports.
Well, yeah, so we're really hoping to kind of use this little stream here and under the Southside Report stream to kind of get comfortable, because I think we still have a long ways to go before the show could kind of actually be smooth and kind of effortless in a way.
Yeah.
Maybe prepare a little bit more. But anyway, pretty good. Let's go for decent. We're going to try to make the show decent. At that point, we're going to get a new stream. We're going to try to get it more Chicago sports-oriented. We'll try to get the stream up on other sites to try to get things going a little bit more, try to get some listeners going a little more. But once again, that's going to take some time. And I think a part of it is people actually trying to call in through Skype, trying to get into the conversation so we can kind of just get adjusted to it, get acclimated with it, and try to make this show, take the show to other levels.
Yep, and we thank all of you guys that tune in, because you guys, a lot of you, are all here consistently. You make this thing enjoyable for us. We have a lot of fun on our own, but we love it when you guys are in here sharing around. It's just a lot better place, and I love this live feedback and this live show, and we're going to be getting better. We're striving to get better for you guys.
The way it would work is, because I know a Whitsox fan was just asking about the whole Skype thing. if you have a Skype account, which it's pretty easy to set up, you set up an account, you set up a username, you simply either write me or Jason and say, hey, I want to be on. We'll give you a call. We'll put you on a conference call, and we'll have you on the show. So that's kind of the plan. And like I said, hopefully we improve the show little by little. Hopefully we improve in the preparation aspect little by little, and we can kind of get this show going and slowly but surely improve and get more listeners and get more interactivity and maybe even get some different types of guests on instead of just you schmoes from Sox Talk. No offense at all.
But we'll be back next Tuesday, same time, same place, 9 p.m. Central Time. So we'll see you then.